Welcome to White Shores, the podcast for spiritual beings having a human experience. Let me invite you to walk once more beside me on White Shores to talk about the real meaning of life and the true power of what is unseen. Let's discuss dreams, intuition, manifesting, as above, so below, angels, afterlife, the science of consciousness, and other infinite possibilities within and all around you. I hope every episode informs, inspires, and illuminates. So, now the scene is set. Allow the grey rain curtain of this world to roll back and all to turn to silver glass. Let's walk barefoot together on the gentle, glistening sands of White Shores to see what mystery lies beyond the material. Thank you for arriving safely on White Shores and beyond, a far green country under a swift sunrise. Tantalizing glimpse or spark there of the theme from perhaps the greatest love story of all time, Romeo and Juliet. Of course, the story of those star-crossed lovers doesn't end that well, but Italian composer Rota's music inspired by Shakespeare's play is so emotional, evocative and enchanting, it really does sweep you along into believing that true love can conquer all, that there can always be a happy ending somewhere in time. And the theme of today's episode of White Shores is love, in particular romantic love, sex, and the spirituality of intimate relationships. After all, isn't finding your other half, your soulmate, kindred spirit, or twin flame what we all dream of at some point in our lives? Someone to have and to hold, and when you meet them, it feels like you have come home. Someone who understands you fully, loves you unconditionally, and in true movie cliche style, completes you. Isn't that romantic quest? The search for a spark of connection with someone else, what gives life its deep meaning? Sure, falling in love is a transcendent and therefore spiritual experience, but, and I stress the but here, it is a phase on the spiritual journey. One I hope you all at some point experience, even if that experience is heartbreaking because your heart grows the more it is used. But if you don't feel you have truly found your soulmate yet, this does not in any way mean you should feel you are lacking in some way. Quite the opposite. Your calling may be to find that spark in other ways through your love of nature, animals, art, your work, serving the greater good, and so on. But above all, it will be through understanding that unconditional love for another person will always be eclipsed by the only love that can truly complete you. And that, of course, is love for yourself, but not in a self-absorbed, selfish or narcissistic way, but loving yourself as the spark of divine, infinite essence or source energy that you are. Understanding that your spirit belongs to this infinite energy that interconnects everyone and everything, and that the greatest love of all is to see and return to your own inner spark. So that even when you find someone who you believe is your perfect match, you understand that they don't really complete you. They can only ever complement you. And should that perfect match, for whatever reason, be that bereavement, divorce, or simply losing the spark, leave your life, you will not feel broken, incomplete, or lacking in any way. Quite the contrary, you will feel stronger and wiser and grateful to have walked beside and learned more about the meaning of life and love with that particular person. Your heart may be broken, and that's tough, but you will know that, like a muscle, the more you use your heart, the wiser and stronger it gets. That's why you should never ever regret your love choices in the past, however disastrous they may appear in hindsight. Your heart needed the workout at the time and was eager to learn and grow through experience and get to a place when you can finally understand that true love is not gazing into each other's eyes. That is simply the early stages when biology takes over. True love is looking up at the stars and learning and evolving together in the same direction. Whether you look together for a lifetime or you walk together for a few days. Of course, it takes time, energy, and a whole lot of relationship experience to finally understand the spiritual truth of love. That the meaning of our lives is not to get something right first time, but to learn and grow through trial and error. And this is especially the case when it comes to intimate relationships. And of course, intimate relationships where we seek that spark of instant love at first sight connection are most likely to occur when we're younger. Not saying they can't happen in later stages of life, because they certainly can and do, but as we mature, we do tend to wise up a little, learn from experience, and also learn to trust that spark a little bit less and our own gut instinct, our own inner spark, a little bit more. However, a part of us will always crave that spark, rather like Bilbo Baggins, who longs to see the ring one more time on his way to the Undying Lands in Lord of the Rings. So whatever age and stage of life you are currently in, this episode of White Shores, which is all about finding the spark in intimate relationships, will have something to ignite a spark within you. It will either encourage you to look back on the relationship choices of your younger self with understanding and deep compassion, or if you are under 35, it might just speak directly to you. And I could not have a better guest to speak to you about what dating is really like today if you are a young person awakening spiritually than my special guest today. Her name is Rosalind Moody, and as you will hear in our upcoming interview, she is a rising star, a bright spark who speaks with tremendous eloquence and experience about love, sex, and spirituality in today's toxic dating world. Rosalind is a writer and former editor of the UK's leading spiritual magazine, Soul and Spirit. She has interviewed many of the world's most spiritually influential people and has been a guest on multiple leading podcasts such as Witch on BBC Sounds and, of course, right now on White Shores. She has also been featured on radio stations such as Psychic Today, Wellbeing Radio and Hay House Radio. She's a writing coach too, and also programs the Mind Body Spirit festivals across the UK, in particular Olympia. She has hosted events for the likes of Teal Swan and expert panels for the likes of LA-based show Conscious Life Expo. She is a fierce campaigner for getting spirituality into the mainstream so that more people who feel lost can find themselves. She believes in connection, creativity, and always having a cup of tea in hand. She lives, for now, currently, with her cat in London, UK. So, if you are on your spiritual journey and wondering how physical and emotional intimacy fits into it all, and whether meditation, tarot card readings, astrology, love summoning rituals, energy work, journaling, manifesting really can help you attract partners into your life, this episode will be a standout listen for you. A heads up, about halfway through the interview, you might hear some knocking in the background. Please bear with us. We do try to ignore it. You'll hear this. We try to ignore it at first, but eventually we give in and make it a part of the interview. Sincere apologies, but Rosalind was recording from this interview from her London apartment, and life, especially in a busy place like London, just doesn't stop going on around you when live recordings happen. So if you do hear that knocking, think of it as love knocking at your door, reminding you to connect to your own inner spark before trying to find it outside yourself. And I do hope you will stay tuned after Rosalind's interview, as I will share my all-time favourite romantic but spiritual-themed book, movie, and music choices. Why not flex your intuition here and see if you can sense ahead of time what they might be? But first, I just can't wait to introduce you now to the honest, relatable, insightful, humorous, and adventurous spark of light and life that is Rosalind Moody and the ageless love and life lessons she's going to impart. And after that introduction, I'm delighted to say that Rosalind Moody, author, and so much more than that, I'm sure, as we will discover in this interview, is here with us today on White Shores and Beyond. Hello, Rosalind.
Hi, Teresa. Thank you so much for having me on.
I'm thrilled. I mean, we have known each other a while, haven't we? We sort of, our paths have crossed.
They very much have, yes, in so many ways.
And I've always admired you, and I think you are more than a rising star. I think you're the future of this kind of personal and spiritual growth, but more about that later. First of all, those listeners who are new to Rosalind Moody, aren't aware of who you are and your work, would you mind just sharing a little bit about you and why you're here today?
I'd love to, yeah. So I am the former editor of Soul and Spirit magazine, which was my spiritual and editorial education. It was the best job in the world, and I did that for years leading up to my Saturn return, actually. That really was the right timing in my life to be awakening, which is what spurred the book, The Spark, because I was dating and awakening at the same time. But in my day job, I very much moved into anything the spirituality industry needs of me, whether that's event programming, social media content creation, anything that the spiritual industry needs from me, I've got my fingers in a lot of pies, and I'm so, so happy to be leading the way for this generation and generations to come with healing and personal development and astrology and relating to the other, whether that's a boyfriend, girlfriend, best friend, boss, mother. I'm so excited to be of service to this industry.
Well, I'm excited you're here today. And I used to love working with you on Soul and Spirit, because we'd have a conversation, and then a few weeks or months later, whenever it came out, I'd read it and you just injected sparkle.
Thank you.
Sort of like a precognition of the title of your book there into it. And it made it just come alive, and you just had an intuitive sense of what I wanted to say. Thank you so much for all the work you did there. But can I just take you back further in time to your childhood?
Oh, please, yeah, let's go.
Life before Soul and Spirit and before your career, as it were.
Yeah.
Your family, were you born into a spiritual, religious family? I want to know if this is in your DNA or it's something that you just birthed.
Oh, I love that question. No, I wasn't. I wasn't born into a spiritual family at all. My family were completely confused why I chose to study philosophy as my undergraduate degree. They couldn't understand why I wanted to think about the big topics. They're a very practical family. I was christened, but I wasn't confirmed. So that kind of spiritual or religious education never formed my childhood. But I was always a very curious child. I was always questioning why and how. I think it was probably like a lot of millennials. It was the ancient Egypt and Greek mythology that kind of fostered my storytelling spiritual brain. And that was really the beginning of me thinking about thinking past, present, future, what I could make of my future. I was always really ambitious when I was little. I always knew I wanted to be an author. I always used to write stories for my grandmothers who I dedicated this book to. And I was always head in a book, complete bookworm, loved my tapes, loved everything creative. So yeah, my parents didn't really get it. They've always supported me regardless, but they've never quite understood where it's come from. Although my dad, my father is an engineer, so that kind of practical creative intersection maybe is what is where I get this kind of creativity and spark from. Because you've got to start with an idea. Everything comes from an idea. You've just got to see it through.
Absolutely. And then when you went to university, why philosophy?
I think it was just the big questions. And maybe I thought, oh, this will be a challenge to make a job out of, which is why getting the editor position of Soul Spirit was so perfect, because the cross-section between English and philosophy, which is my joint degree, was so perfect. Kind of, it made me a better writer. Writing those essays about big abstract concepts and topics was a challenge for 18-year-old me, who loved a challenge. So I think that was really the start of me writing spiritual topics and writing this book. I mean, I couldn't have done it without every little challenge along the way with the stories.
Of course, philosophy always encourages you to ask why, isn't it, and to think deeper and look beneath the surface. So that, you know, the course was really set with your life, really, wasn't it? And then I believe these things happen for a reason. You worked for Soul and Spirit and really transformed that, didn't you? How many years were you there?
It's 4.5, but I oversaw the redesign. So when I jumped on in 2018, I just got back from my gap year, and it was complete accident, although nothing's an accident. I completely accidentally on purpose manifested the job as acting editor, then got the job as editor in summer 2018. And it was a different look magazine right then. It was for maybe a slightly different market. And I thought, I can feel something brewing here. I'd just been in Bali. I knew the kind of new age cosmic hunger that we had over in UK for crystals, yoga, angels, oracle cards, dreamology, everything. And I just thought, we need to make this a beautiful product that women are proud to be seen reading and can see themselves in. And I want to make it diverse, and I want to make it inclusive and welcoming and warm. And I really hope that I did that, and I believe that I did.
I believe you did, certainly. But of course, your real calling was to be an author, and that's why you decided, was it a year or so ago, to take a leap of faith?
It was longer than that, actually.
Oh, right. When was the seed sown for that?
I think it was in about 2019. This book I've been working on for about 5 years without really realizing it. I had all these notes, all these journaling documents that I'd made when I was trying to figure out how I felt about someone or something or an event. And I couldn't figure out how I felt about it before I wrote about it. So that was 2019. I think maybe going into the pandemic, where I really thought, okay, let me see what I've got here. And I'd been asking you, I'd been asking some of my other columnists, how do you get into a book deal? How does one go about it? And just like you, everyone was so, so generous with their advice. And I was in the best spot. So thank you so, so much for all the help and advice and introductions that you made, because you really helped me start something here.
But of course, you were writing a diary of your own dating experiences, and that's what you've transformed into The Spark, a delicious read. Please tell us about the writing process, how much of those old diaries made it into the book, and just tell us about the book and and your time writing it.
Thank you. Yeah, I think any writer will tell you, and as you know, it can be a painful process sometimes, but also amazing. I got a writer's high. People talk about runner's high, and I got a writer's high so much when writing it. It was a challenge. I wanted it to be a memoir manual, so kind of my story forms the backbone of the book, although there's a lot of helpful tips and takeaways for dating and self-love and self-care and moonology and birth charts and crystals and all sorts in there. So I just want the reader to know that I'm with them every step of the way. They don't need to feel lame or pathetic for needing these tips and tricks to navigate the dating world and the world in general. But yeah, the book came about from journaling, and it was quite a process of transforming those notes into prose. It took many, many drafts. I'd been told writing is just redrafting, and I didn't quite understand that until I got down to it. But the book is told in 7 different chakras. So we go from the root all the way up to the crown. So the idea is that you are fully unblocked and balanced by the time you finish the book, which obviously finishing a book is a great feeling anyway. But redrafting each of those chapters, I did maybe about 7 times, and there's 7 chapters, so you can do the maths. I mean, there are a lot of different files being flung around. I had a few readers which were helpful and gave me some good advice, and it's really hard when you're in it to see outside of it. So I really, really valued the advice, and I was it was a lot.
And you share your dating experiences quite candidly.
Yes.
As a young woman,
yes,
in today's world, and whether spiritual methods helped or hindered, please would you mind sharing some anecdotes from the book, or you know what you can share at this stage?
Yeah, so I had no idea that dating could be aided by spiritual means. I thought they were always separate. I thought that when I was on my gap year, it was great. I was having all these spiritual experiences. I was staying at a monastery in northern Thailand for a while, just meditating every day and having imposter syndrome, like, why do I get this lucky and my friends are back home working? I was in Bali. I had a healer, and that was a wake-up call for sure. And when I got home and I went straight back into the dating game, I had a rude awakening because I was finding it so tough, and I thought this just must be me, just must be me on my own. And when I started to merge the two, that's when magic started to really happen. I could start setting boundaries. I could start kind of automatic writing so that I could get my answers from spirit when I just needed a dating guru. Spirit was there. Spirit was my dating guru. My intuition started coming through. But I think we block a lot of our intuition when we're so distracted by other people and things going on and exciting things. But there's a lot in the book that's packed in. I've tried to be as generous as possible with finding out how you can feel about someone or something. And as you're dating, you're getting to know yourself as well. And leading up to your Saturn return, your 20s can be chaos. And I think a lot of people feel shame or guilt that they don't have it all together in their 20s. You're not meant to have it together in your 20s. But these rituals help you get to know yourself while you're out meeting people and loving people and lusting after people, that you will still be grounded if you follow what I had to learn the hard way.
Now, I'm guessing a lot of the people you dated, they probably weren't as in tune with spiritual speak or language as you would be. When did you hit them with "this is who I am"?
Oh,
I just would like to know how they took it. You know, a spiritual girl, a spiritual single girl. How did they react?
Yeah, I love that question. A lot of the time, the first question I got from anyone, because you can have your job on your dating profile. So I had editor at a spiritual magazine on my dating profile. And a lot of the time, the first question would be, but do you believe in it? I know it's your job, but do you personally believe in it? And sometimes in the early days, I would skirt around it and say, well, professionally, yes, but personally, I'm still learning, or yes and no. But increasingly, it became, yes, absolutely, I'm spiritual. This is what I believe. And luckily, the people that don't quite think that that's true or agree or are open-minded enough to have me have that opinion just filter away. They just filter themselves. If you step forward in your true self, then the wrong people just filter themselves away. So yeah, in the early days, I was maybe a bit sheepish about it. But now I'm kind of out and proud, out of the spiritual closet, I would say. And people really admire it. People admire people with a passion. They love that I have lent so far into this industry that I've written a book in it. Then the intimidated ones, I'll thank very much for a lovely conversation and say goodbye to. Like, there's no passive aggression in it at all. And as long as someone respects me and my opinions, I'll respect them and theirs. But I am seeing an increasing amount of men who are leaning into it in their own way. And we can all have our own entry point into the industry. That's fine. They might follow Joe Dispenza and other kind of neuroscientific experts, and I might be more on the quote-unquote woo-woo side of things, but we can meet in the middle and we can have really interesting conversations. It's when a man or a woman, but mostly men, especially in my experience, go too far into it and they become what I call a spiritual narcissist, that all they do is speak, and it's too much and too intense that I kind of have to say thank you, goodbye.
And when we had a brief sort of glimpse of what may have been going overboard on the spiritual, I think it was recent here, if you're UK-based, Married at First Sight, there was someone there. I don't know if you followed that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, he said, I'd always choose the universe over you.
Yes, I mean, and it was the poor girl's face when he said that to her, that nothing's, of course, I mean, the thing is, though, I understood what he was saying. Mm-hmm. You know, in an expansive sense, I get that, but it just felt so overblown, and this poor girl was completely lost, wasn't she, in this vortex?
Absolutely.
And he was, you know, meditating and the image and being spiritual, but sort of like had become this persona, which you wondered, is this real?
Exactly.
Have you met people like that?
Oh, so many. The book opens with my very own version of that person.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Is that a guru, a teacher, or someone who you went on a course with?
Oh, my boyfriend. He was my boyfriend. Yes. And he was.
How did you meet? Did you mind, or is that too personal?
Oh, no. I talk about it in the book as well. And I can
can't
tell.
Wait to read it, by the way, Rosalind.
Thank you. I can't wait for it to be out in the world.
I know. Tell me how you met.
So I met Supernova at a party in summertime. This was years ago. This is what started the book off. This was the very seed of my own awakening. And he was exactly this character from Married at First Sight. He was dreadlocked. He had this air of a guru. He had this God complex. He was vain. He had I don't want to give golden retriever energy a bad name, but he was so excitable and he was intense, and he was a lot. But I totally fed over. I can't get my words out. I fell head over heels in love with him straight away.
Well, of course, because you do. Someone is giving you that much caressing and affection and adoration,
exactly,
and is giving the impression that you are the center of everything. It's very hard, isn't it, sometimes to, you know, if you're physically attracted to the person as well, to not believe it's true.
Exactly. I didn't see through it at all. Loved ones around me saw through it, but I had to make room way.
I mean, did some people say, well, I'm not so sure, I don't buy into this, and you just thought that they were being killjoys?
Absolutely. I thought they may have been jealous, or they were just boring. But I was not an emotionally mature place myself.
Yeah. And so when did the veil lift?
Oh, it was a good. Well, I say we have the honeymoon period for about 3 months, and we did. And then things started getting testy. And so it was about 3 to 6 months. And then after that, I mean, I won't ruin anything, but it got very dark. Yeah, it was when the love bombing stopped and the toxic wrenching down of my esteem started. So, you know, like cutting remarks, very cruel kind of remarks out of nowhere, that I would kind of sheepishly say, please don't talk to me like that. And then we'd have an argument and then we'd make up and then it would happen again. And it was just this toxic cycle that so many people can relate to. And even if it wasn't their boyfriend or husband that they can relate to it with, could have been a mother or a boss or a best friend. you feel scared to kind of bring up your true feelings, but the only person you can talk about your feelings with is them, because maybe they've isolated you from other people and your wider support network. So it's really insidious. But the way I call it a spiritual narcissist is because they use spirituality speak to woo. They use the whole universe loves us, the universe wants us together. Let's make love around loads of crystals. Let's have our incense on. You know, all of this performative wokeness that's so icky.
I'm hearing knocking in the back, Rosalind. I'm just checking that there's not some spirits around. For listeners can hear knocking. Are you okay? Is there someone knocking at the door?
Fortunately, my flat is not haunted, but there is renovation next door because I have just moved into London and you can't seem to get away from noise. So sorry about that.
Okay, I just wanted to just double check because I do get messages from people saying, what happened? Are you all right?
Yeah.
So that's fine. The knocking is totally normal. It's life and life happens, everyone.
Yeah, sorry about that.
So we will carry on through the knocking. Just think of it as some kind of communication. But I mean, this is fascinating. But when did you find the inner strength, the self-belief to say, I deserve better?
It was just the exhaustion. I was at the end of everything. But the cracking moment was one of my friend's faces when I was describing another argument that we'd had to her, and her face just fell. It just fell into such grave worry that I read it and I finally thought, what I just said must just be awful. So I think I need to do something about this now. So it was her face that really helped me. And people were really worried about me, and looking back, especially writing this book, I was worried about myself. I was a shell of myself. And
do you think that your partner will recognize himself in this book?
I've wanted to protect a lot of people's privacy, so a lot of the names and mannerisms and kind of some of the traits have been changed to protect their privacy, because it's not their book, it's my book. Just like when we're setting boundaries, yes, this is my need, not yours. So I wanted to really make sure it was more about me and my feelings, so that the reader could directly relate to me rather than projecting and making it a whole revenge thing.
Yeah, no, revenge is not sweet, is it?
No.
Just back at you. But it's your perspective of the relationship, and you're very entitled to discuss this. It's how it impacted you. But what I have found, because I've had some narcissistic abuse experts on White Shores, actually Melanie Tonia Evans, one of them, and it was an education talking to her, because she was saying it's a gift to have these kind of relationships. It doesn't feel like it at the time, but it's a powerful call to self-love. A reminder that self-love isn't there yet, because if the self-love is there, you would instantly suspect someone like that. Where are you? Do you agree?
I agree. He, Supernova, would wax on about self-love. And the fact is, it was ironic because he had none. Narcissists have self-hatred, and they want to drag anyone down that has an inch of self-love for themselves. So, and it was quite ironic, the fact that at the end of our relationship, he would say, I'm going to be fine because I love myself. And I thought, you don't like, that's come across really arrogant, but that was really the kind of first time I heard about self-love, and it was thrown in my face because I really loved him too, but I had none of my love left for myself. And these days, it's really testament that the work I've done has really worked, and the rituals I share really do have results, because these days I would see one coming a mile off, 100 miles off.
I mean, some people go through life never meeting these kind of individuals who really are kind of like sort of energy vampires, aren't they? As well as lacking self-love, they often lack an inner identity for whatever reason. So they try to absorb the identities of others, almost like feeding off them.
Exactly,
and when they've got all they need, they discard in a very brutal, cruel way, leaving the person completely bereft, because they wonder all these words meant nothing. And it really challenges your belief in people, doesn't it?
But absolutely.
It can lead to tremendous, tremendous personal growth and awakening, in much the same way that a bereavement can, when you really start looking at life in a different way. And it opens you up. And, of course, with you, it led to you writing this book.
Absolutely.
And hopefully using your experience to help other people who may well be going through similar similar dynamics. So moving forward, you cover other kinds of relationships since then, and also spiritual techniques. Of all the spiritual techniques you've experimented with, let's talk about dating. Which one is your sort of go-to now?
Oh, there's a few, because you can do techniques when you're just alone at home on your own and you're not seeing anyone and you might be swiping, but self-love, there's a lot of mirror work and affirmations that I swear by when you're kind of getting ready to date. But when you're dating a person and it's going well or not, there are some really big conversations that can be had. Communication no one finds easy, but there are some ways that I've learned to do it that really help make everyone's life easier. So it's a bit of both, though, for sure. You have to have self-love even when someone else loves you. It's not just when you're not dating or taking a man ban. It has to be when you're loving you, when someone else is in a relationship with you, you're also in a relationship with you. So yeah, travel is a big one as well. I found a lot of self-love through travel, meeting people out as well, and just being yourself.
So it's a real adventure, isn't it, of your journey to personal and spiritual growth, shared to help others find their way. Would you say it's specifically targeted for people under 30, or is it open for all ages, your book?
I would say anyone who needs a bit of love in the right direction can read it. I would say even maybe teenagers, like 16 and up, can relate to what I'm saying, because I was still early 20s when I started this, when I started this spiritual awakening. So if they can look ahead and know that hard times are on the way, but also 30s, 40s, even actually in idealizing who could read this book, even parents, like a generation or two above me, can read it.
To understand, exactly.
Yeah.
And golden oldies like me who still have to work on self-love, I'm sure that there's something in there for us as well.
Absolutely. There's something in it for everyone. And just anything's an entry point with self-love. So even if it's just one ritual, I like to use the gratitude gaze, which I can share with your listeners now, which is just...
Oh, please, because my next question, so you are intuitive, was to ask if there's one tip you would intuitively feel listeners of White Shores would need to hear right now, at this moment as they're listening, what would it be? So please, can you share that?
I can share one very big self-love tactic. And it sounds simple, but its results are... they really do stay with you. So I call it the gratitude gaze. And we talk a lot about in popular culture about the male gaze and, you know, all of that and being in someone's gaze. But when you're single and you're healing, being in your own gaze is very sacred, and it really, really matters. So on a night that you've got to yourself, or just 10 minutes in your day, you can just start to look at every piece of your body in a mirror or just in a bath or anything, and start to actually look at it mindfully and kind of breathe light and love into it. Even just, you'd never realize how cute your ankles were before, or how shapely your legs were before, or if you don't like your tummy because you had a baby and it's never been the same since, kind of gaze at it with so much gratitude and love. And that will just mean that your body feels renewed. It feels so much loved than it did 10 minutes ago. And that will just feed back into your brain and how you speak to yourself, and within about 5 days of doing that, then you'll start to see yourself differently in the mirror.
You certainly will. Perspective is everything. And again, apologies if you're listening for the knocking. It's neither Rosalind's or my fault. It's just life. Rosalind lives in a busy city of London, and it's quite hard to pin her down for a time. So please don't think there's some kind of Morse code in the background, because what I don't want is listeners to be diverting to try and work out if you've locked somebody. Maybe one of your former boyfriends is locked in the cupboard under the stairs, and he's signalling to listeners of
Welsh. Help!
And I'm glad we're coming to a moment of levity, because one thing I'm sure in your book that's going to be there is it won't be overly serious, that you do inject humour into it. Because I think you described it, didn't you, as kind of like a mix of Bridget Jones and Fleabag and all that. I do remember one of your posts describing it in that way.
Yes, I do. Yeah, it's Fleabag-esque. I don't always write myself in the best light. like I'm human, I made mistakes. And in the book, I do try and take responsibility as much because I feel like that's healing and empowering. I also relate to myself as kind of Carrie Bradshaw's cosmic goddaughter who lives over in London and visits her godmother in New York sometimes, because I feel like that's the millennial kind of, that's the kind of generational gap between us, that Sex and the City came before and walked so authors like me could run. And I really appreciate the kind of self-empowering 2000s because it fostered what I grew up with.
Absolutely. Of course, did you follow And Just Like That, the follow-up to Sex and the City? May I have your review?
Yeah, I did. And I didn't hate it as much as other people did. I thought they gave it a good try.
Yeah, I mean, it was. It's been renewed again and again, isn't it? I mean, it's so popular, enduring, isn't it? What is it about Carrie Bradshaw, that character in particular, that just speaks to people? I mean, there's a popularity, it's undeniable, whatever you think about it. It's iconic.
Yeah, I mean, I have watched those old series with new eyes recently, and you realise, oh, she's so pathetic sometimes.
I know.
You really do.
I mean, it's so non-spiritual, isn't it? Because it's all about the shoes.
And yeah.
Great apartments. who can afford that? And they spend all their time talking about relationships.
Exactly.
And fashion. Yeah.
And it's not grounded in reality, but I think spirituality in 2024 is very much grounded in reality. We need spirituality more than ever because of what's going on in our world. So, yeah, I don't think it's aged very well, but I think it's a nostalgic thing. And maybe my point of difference or different point of reference was that I wasn't materialistic and I was never going to grow up to obsess around shoes. I was going to obsess around experiences instead and my connections with people, friends, family and romantic connections instead. And that was what I'd hold dear. And maybe my journal is the equivalent of my closet because I look through my journals and think I'm so rich in connections and I'm so abundant in love. And it really shifts your mindset when you stop looking at what you don't have and start looking at what you do have. Not to sound so earnest, but yeah, that's really what got me to this point.
It is. Appreciation is such a vibration, raises your vibration so much and attracts good things your way. Sometimes it's harder than others to do that, but it is a choice as well. People think appreciation just happens to them. You can choose it, can't you? Oh, Rosalind, I love talking to you.
You
too. I really do. I'm wishing this book every success, willing it forward, because you are speaking for a generation of people, as you say, who are eager, hungry for experiences and to understand the real meaning of life, you know. And I think The Spark should be essential reading. I haven't read it yet, though, but that just shows my faith in Rosalind. As I said, I've known her many years now. And also, of course, we're connected through Olympia now, aren't you? Because you're also working there, if I may say.
Yes. So we have taken on many, many different kinds of connections, haven't we? When I commissioned you for Soul and Spirit, and now talking about my first book, and in a few weeks we'll be at London Olympia for the Mind, Body, Spirit Festival, which I've programmed and very, very excited about the program that we've got on, not just because it has you front and center. It's just got so many amazing speakers and the vibe is going to be electric.
I think it is as well. I think because we've come out of the pandemic now, you know, I think people have been cautious to come back to these kind of events. I think that the timing is right for a really intelligent, heartfelt, humorous conversations, humorous emphasis on humor, because I think if you're not enjoying your spiritual growth, you really need to look at that, don't you, Rosalind? Are you enjoying your spiritual growth now? It sounds like you are.
I am. I'm on the new phase. I'm in the London phase now. I'm just turned 30, just moved to London, and life and the universe is throwing me a lot of curveballs, and I'm just dealing with it one by one. And yeah, just keeping the humour and the lightness and the play, because if I don't, my ego will take over and ruin everything. So I'm just...
Well, the ego loves crashing in, doesn't it? But sometimes it's actually picking up the pieces and learning from the mistakes that the real treasure is, isn't it? You can't be perfect all the time. Perfect's dull.
Oh, I'm definitely not perfect. And may I add, if I hadn't failed at all of the relationships and situationships, if I hadn't had failure in my love life, in my 20s, I wouldn't have a book. So failure really counts.
Take your broken heart and turn it into art, as the immortal Carrie Fisher from Star Wars said. That's a great note to end it. However, I do need to ask three classic Whiteshaw's question, rapid fire, just so that people can have a visual image for you in mind. This is audio only podcast for a reason, because I love people to daydream and imagine what the person looks like from their voice. We've heard a lot. We can learn a lot about you from your voice, but three quick questions to create a visual image. If you could be a colour, what would it be and why?
Oh, pink.
Why?
Because it's so high vibe, so divine feminine led, and it's the colour of my book.
Perfect. If you could be an animal, what would it be and why?
Oh, a cat for sure, because I have a cat, a very bossy little familiar called Tabitha, and I feel like I'd be a very bossy cat.
And they're so intuitive and mysterious, aren't they? And elegant and loyal and loving.
Exactly.
Finally, if you could be a musical instrument, what would it be and why?
Ooh, I play the piano, but I don't want to say the piano here. I'm going to say crystal bowls, because it's the crystal sound.
I get it. Yeah.
The sound bowls. Because they're just, they create a frequency that is so healing. And that is absolutely what I want to do as a human on this planet. And with my book, I just want to create a frequency that is just divine and beautiful and very healing.
You certainly are. And so if you do have the opportunity to ever cross paths with Rosalind, or you seek her out online, which I hope you will do after this interview, think of a pink cat playing crystal balls. That's your avatar.
I love that.
Thank you so much, Rosalind.
Thank you so much. Thanks.
Sincerely hope that interview spoke to your body, mind, heart, and soul, and that if it did, you will seek Rosalind out and her first title, The Spark. Details in the show notes. Now, at the start of this episode, I said I would share my favourite romantic but spiritual books, movie, and music choices. So here we go. I think they all showcase different aspects of love, but most of all, I've chosen them because they teach us about life too, and the importance of balancing love for another with your own personal and spiritual growth and development. For the book, I chose the classic read, Pride and Prejudice, by Jane Austen, where one of my favourite lines is when Jane asks Elizabeth when exactly she fell in love with Darcy. And in true Jane Austen style, Elizabeth answers when she first saw Darcy's Pemberley mansion. You see, Elizabeth has learned that love must be a mix of both the heady and the practical. My second choice would be Sense and Sensibility, again by Jane Austen, as it is also about learning about yourself through love of another. It's also about balancing the two aspects of yourself, the intuitive and the rational. I'm going to give an honourable mention here too for the love between the elf Arwen and the ranger Aragorn, a tale of sacrifice, immortal love, and the struggle against darkness that features in J.R.R. Tolkien's The Lord of the Rings. All the above, of course, Pride and Prejudice, Sense and Sensibility, and Lord of the Rings are both books and movies for you to enjoy. But for movies, I must add Titanic here, because Rose doesn't give up on life when her Jack dies. Instead, she chooses to live life to the full afterwards. The love that Jack gave her inspires her to do that. And true love should inspire you to want to live your remaining years on earth to the full, in celebration, in honour of the person you have loved and lost. There's also that haunting final scene in the movie where both Jack and Rose are reunited in the afterlife, a memory that has stayed forever alive within Rose. It never fails to make me smile and cry when I watch that movie, and I've watched it many, many times. Honourable mention here too for Ghost, where Patrick Swayze says, "The love inside, Molly, you take it with you." What a breathtakingly, achingly moving scene. It's mighty powerful emotionally and spiritually, showing us that, yes, the love inside, it goes on. Moving to music. I'm spoiled for choice here, and every day I hear another great piece of music, and that becomes my favourite because it makes my heart sing, as music is the language of love in all its different forms. But for spiritual love, which I guess is the end goal of this episode and indeed our lives, it would have to be Liszt Liebstrom, which will end this episode of White Shores. It's going to play now, because I'm fortunate to have my son and Royal College of Music scholar Robert here to play it, so there are no copyright issues because it's his performance of a classic. In translation, Liebstrom means love dream, and it celebrates the highest, divinest form of love, which is unconditional spiritual love for yourself, others, and the universe. Now, this is the love the journey of our lives is to evolve through, and we evolve through and to it through life experience and throughout time. So find somewhere quiet to listen and safe to close your eyes, put your feet up, relax, and for a few precious, priceless moments, let this immortal piece of timeless love give your mind, body, heart, and soul wings. It is a live performance as you listen, so you may hear some chairs scraping or people rustling their programs, so do forgive that, but rather like the knocking on your heart's door during Rosalind's interview. It's all part of the rich and living tapestry of life. Nothing in life is ever truly perfect, and it shouldn't be, because it's through the imperfections, through the cracks, that the light and the joy and the laughter and the love comes in. Thank you from my heart and soul for being here and walking beside me in spirit on white shores. Sensitive, kind, compassionate souls like you who see beyond the material are needed more than ever today to help this earth heal and evolve. If you have any questions, stories, or insights to share, I absolutely love hearing from you and aim to reply to everyone in due course. My website is www.teresachung.com. My contact email is angeltalk710@aol.com. And you can message me via my Instagram handle, The Teresa Chung, as well as my Facebook and Twitter author pages. Until we meet again on these white shores, keep being amazing spiritual you, sending my eternal love and gratitude.